I want you to look at a verse in Isaiah. We're going to be in Daniel 1. But I want you to look at a verse that I came across this week. I want you to look at Isaiah 39, verse 7. Isaiah 39, verse 7. I've never connected these before until this week. And of thy sons... Now remember, you're talking about Isaiah that's 700 years before Christ. So this is 100 and probably at least 100 years before Daniel. All right? And of thy sons that shall issue from thee, which thou shalt beget, shall they, that's the Babylonians, take away. And they shall be eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon. I want you to think about that verse. One of the early church fathers was a man named Jerome. And in his commentary on Daniel, he mentions that he thinks that this is a prophetic utterance about Daniel and who we call the three Hebrew children. That's who I want to preach a little bit about tonight. The title of the message is The Pressure to Change. The Pressure to Change. All of us know people that have been pressured to change. We see it with our friends. We see it in our own families. We see how that society, Christian society, is constantly pushing. In Romans chapter 12, verse 2, it says, and be not conformed to this world. The word conform then has the idea of taking clay and pushing it into a mold. Just like we used Play-Doh when we were little kids and we would push it into a form of a star, or if it was Christmas, we may have had our moms make Christmas cookies and they would do maybe little Christmas trees, something along that line. The dough would be formed by a mold. That's what the word conformed in Romans 12 means. And all of us have seen this in our lives. We have probably even been pressured to do that ourselves. I remember in my own family, the pressure really, it was really hard. You know, when it comes from your mother, that's tough. You know, I mean, she gave you birth. You know, she's got some juice. And I remember when I had only been married for a short time and the kids finally started coming along, and I guess Sarah would have probably been 5, Dallas would have been about 3, and Boo would have probably just been born. And she would say, well, now the third Sunday in April, we're going to have a family reunion, and I'm expecting you to be there. And I would say, Mom, I'm not coming. Well, what do you mean you're not coming? I'm not coming the third Sunday in April. Well, everybody else is coming. Everybody else in the family's coming. I don't know why you can't come. Just because you're in the ministry, you can skip church. And I said, no, I can't. Could I get the day off? I probably could have. Brother Don would have said, sure. You know, go see your family. But I would say, I tell you what I'll do. I'll make a compromise with you. If you do it the third Saturday in April, I will be there. And she would say, well, everybody wants to do it on Sunday. And I said, well, I won't be there. And finally, it got to the point to where when she set it up for Saturdays just so that I would come. You say, you're kind of hard-headed about that. Well, I think the Lord's day is the Lord's day. It's not my day to do what I want to do. It's the Lord's day. Now, I think that Saturday is my day. I can do what I want to on Saturday. And I don't mind getting in my vehicle and packing my kids up and driving 4 hours one way to South Georgia, spend 3 or 4 hours there, and when everybody's starting to kind of filter away and go back to wherever they come from, me pack up and head this way. But the pressure was great because it came from somebody that I love dearly. And you have felt times in your life when the pressure on you has been great. Perhaps you were sitting in a classroom and the question arose, and in your mind you go, well, I know the answer to this, but this is not the answer that I really want to give, because if I do, then the teacher's going to be mocking me. Or maybe it's a professor in college. They're going to denigrate me publicly in front of, you know, 100, 150 people. So I just keep my mouth shut. The pressure becomes great. At the end of the message tonight, I'll talk about a lady that her name's actually Karen, and how that she and her husband had been married only a very short time, and she worked for a pharmaceutical company. And I'll tell that story whenever I get to the end of the message tonight. But I just want you to know that pressure is real. Sometimes back in the late 70s and early 80s, somebody coined the term peer pressure. And every time I hear that term, I can't help but think of a guy that played on the Clemson National Championship football team. I think it was like 81. Danny Ford was, I think, the coach of Clemson at the time. And this guy was like one of the stars on the football team the year that they won that natty. And a friend of mine, his name is Marty. His name is Marty Benton. Marty actually has a ministry to try to get Bibles into Iran right now. And I remember Marty telling me this story. He said, I was talking to him, and he said, I just asked him, he said, I called his name, said, how do you handle the peer pressure? And he looked at Marty and he said, what do you mean? He said, well, you're a believer. You play on a nationally known football team. The people are coming at you right and left, trying to get you to conform to the way that the world does things. How do you handle that kind of pressure? Doesn't the peer pressure get to you? And he looked at my friend Marty and he said, Marty, let me tell you something. He said, I am the peer pressure. I'm the one that puts pressure on other people. I'm a Christian. I'm salt. I'm light. I do what the Lord wants me to do. And when I heard Marty tell me that story, my first thought was, dear God, help me to have that kind of strength, where it doesn't matter what everybody else is doing. Help me to just simply be strong enough as a Christian to say, I will do that or I won't do that. I want you to remember some dates. I want you to remember 626 BC to 585 BC. You say, why is that important? Because there's a guy named Jeremiah that lived during that time. Jeremiah was a weeping prophet. Jeremiah was a prophet for 40 years at least. In 40 years, nobody ever listened to his message. Nobody. He would have other prophets that would come along and they would say, you don't need to listen to Jeremiah. He represents the old ways. you need to listen to us. We'll tell you what's happening. And Jeremiah is saying, the Babylonians are coming and God is going to be sending judgment. And these other prophets are going, no, 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 everything's good. And Jeremiah would say, no, it's not. And they didn't like what Jeremiah had to say. Is there anybody in here that has ever heard of the name Cassandra? About three of you, all right? All right, Deb, you raised your hand. I saw you. Where does that come from? No idea. Okay. Let me tell you where it comes from. It comes from ancient Greece. Cassandra was condemned by the gods of Mount Olympus to always tell the truth. No matter what was asked of her, she always had to speak the truth. But the curse would be this: nobody would ever believe her. Nobody. That's Jeremiah. He preached, judgment's coming. The Babylonians are coming. And the other guys, no, they're not. You know, you're just one of those old Bible thumpers. You're one of those guys that, you know, that you're stuck in the old ways, man. I mean, that's in the past. And he wanted to just not say anything. He wanted to just keep his mouth shut. But it was said of Jeremiah, he said, I tried to keep silent, but he said, inside, it was as though my bones were on fire and I had to say something. And so we know those dates because he was saying, judgment's coming, and they would not believe him. The next date that I want you to remember is 605 BC. That was the first time that the Babylonians came. That is the year that Daniel and his three friends, that is the year that they were taken as teenagers. And they were carried back to Babylon, and that's where their whole lives would be spent. They were not going to be able to come back to the promised land. So in 605 BC, that was the first conquest of Judah. Now in 722 BC, 120 years prior, you had the north. They had already been conquered by Assyria. But now that great world empire of Nebuchadnezzar, it rolled in and they went down in 605. A few years passed. 597, you've got a second incursion from Babylon into the land of Judah. That is the conquering that Ezekiel became a part of the captivity. He was dragged back to Babylon. That's when you have the psalm that says things like this: we hanged our harps on the willow trees when we thought of the songs of Zion. In other words, they longed for those days back when they were in the promised land. And so in 597, you have Ezekiel, and he was taken. And then the last one happened in 586 BC, and that is when the third and the final conquering took place. And that's when the temple was destroyed, all of the furniture, all of the utensils, the vessels, of gold, they were all confiscated and they were taken back to Babylon. And so we have those dates. 1 year into the captivity is when Jeremiah dies. And so he's an old man. He's preached 40 years. What he preached has come to pass. He would not change his message, and yet Babylon still conquered them. He was pressured to change, but he would not, and ultimately he was vindicated. And so I want us to think about Daniel and his friends tonight and the pressure that these young men were under. I think about the pressure that the young people in our church are under right now. There's not a week that goes by that some podcast that I'm listening to does not talk about something like AI. They talk about the different AIs that are out there, and there's many of them. There's AIs that are now being sued by parents because the AIs have told their teenagers to do things, and some of them have actually committed suicide because the AIs have told them, well, if that's what you feel like, that's good. And they've gone back, and whether it's one from Google or one from Microsoft or any of that, you've got all of these AIs that are pushing these things. There's people that absolutely believe that AIs, and I may be behind the curve. I'm always behind the curve. But there's people that believe that AI is actually going to take the place of psychologists and psychiatrists in their ability to diagnose people in the different problems that they have. I don't understand that. I do know this. I've never used an AI that I'm aware of. Now, I've talked to one. I was irritated yesterday talking to one on Comcast. At least it sounded like an AI. I kept going, representative, representative, representative. I want to talk to a human being. That's who I want to talk to. I can communicate better with them than I can a machine. But I'm always behind the curve. But I know this, with all of the medical things that we have been going through with my wife, my two girls are constantly asking AI to explain it in more simple terms. I see Elizabeth shaking her head like she must have done that too. And I bet you that some of you are doing it, and you probably are using it at work. You say, are you against it? No, and yes. And yes, and no. Yes, yes. No, no. Be honest with you, I'm a double-minded man that's unstable in all my ways when it comes to this. But you and I, we are in times in which there's great pressure for us to change. There's pressure on us to change our style of worship at this church. It's been going on for a long time. That's why I made the statement this morning, probably not three churches out of 100 that would sing songs like Nothing But the Blood anymore. And so tonight I want us to look at chapter 1, and we're going to look at some of the pressures that these young men faced. The first one that I want you to see is found in verse number 6. I think it's verse 6. Let me get my glasses on. And this is the pressure to change names. Now, among these were the children of Judah. You have Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah. Now, if I were to ask you to name the three Hebrew children, probably every one of you, just to give myself a little out, perhaps maybe one or two of you would not, but most of you would have said Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. That's exactly what you would have said. You know why? Because I do the same thing. But that was not their given names. The names that they had were Daniel, and then you had Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Those were the Hebrew names. But yet, they are now having their names changed. Why is that? Because if you can change a name, then you can begin to cause people to have memories to be forgotten. I'll give you an example. How many of you remember what Alexander the Great did? Now, Babylon, who we are talking about tonight, is the first of the great world empires according to the dream in Daniel 2. The second one is the Medes and the Persians. That's where the country of Iran is located today. A lot of news today about Iran. Lots of news. The mullahs may be in danger more so than they have been probably since 79 when the Ayatollah Khomeini took over for the Shah under Jimmy Carter. The third world empire was Alexander the Great. The term that is used for Alexander is called Hellenization. That means that he wanted to Hellenize the known world. They changed the language. The universal language was now Greek. He wanted everybody to come under basically the Greek banner. He wanted culturally to have Greek as the dominant culture. Did not matter where you came from. If you came from Israel, they wanted you to be under the Greek culture. That's why they went and they took the Old Testament, which had always been written in Hebrew, and they took the Old Testament and they translated it into Greek, and that became known as the Septuagint. So Alexander the Great, he's changing names. The Romans, in about 100 AD, after they had put down all of these rebellions of the Jews, it so ticked off, I think it was Hadrian, that what he did was he said, we're going to get rid of the name Israel. And on all of the official maps in the Roman Empire, he had them redrawn, and what was known as Israel became known as Palestine. The name change. Why is that? To let them forget their past. 1975, I was in my first year of college. There was a decree that came along from, I think it was Albania. Albania in 46 had become communist. And I think it was 67, they closed 630 Orthodox churches in that country. Why? Because they got tired of the religious people bothering what they were trying to accomplish with communism. And so in 1975, they did something that was audacious. They took every single person and every single family in Albania and they changed their names. No longer would they have any name that had any type of Christian root to it. It was all going to be different. There was going to be nothing of a Christian religious nature in Albania, and they sent this decree out in 1975, and they had a whole list of names that you could choose from, but if you had any type of Christianized name, your name was different. That's exactly what has happened in our story. You have a lot of communists that do that. Pol Pot did it in Cambodia. Cambodia is no longer called Cambodia. It is called, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, it is called Kampuchea. That's something that people do. Why do you think in our own country they wanted to tear down statues with people's names on them? I even heard people talk about we need to get rid of the Jefferson Memorial. We need to get rid of the Lincoln Memorial. Why is that? Because these guys represent an old time. All of that's old. We don't need any of that. Well, we see this in our chapter tonight. I want you to look at verse 7. And it says, "And Daniel, or unto the prince of the eunuchs, gave names, for he gave unto Daniel the name Belshazzar, to Hananiah of Shadrach, to Mishael, Meshach, and to Azariah of Abednego." Now, I want you to see how they're trying to change this. They're not trying to let them continue to worship the way that they used to. Nothing pluralistic about Babylon. Daniel, the name means Elohim is my judge. But Belshazzar, it means may Bel protect him. Bel, B-E-L, is a Babylonian god. What about Hananiah? That name means Yahweh is gracious. But when they said, your name is no longer called Hananiah, you're called Shadrach. That means that Aku, A-K-U, is exalted, Babylonian god. Mishael means who is what Elohim is. Elohim, of course, is an Old Testament name for God. But Meshach, who is what Aku is. What about Azariah? His name means Yahweh is my helper. But Abednego simply means the servant of Nebo, which is another Babylonian god. So there's the pressure to change names. I like the name Corinth Baptist Church. But when I'm gone, I have no idea. I'd like to think that I've got another 4 or 5 years left in me, but I'm telling you, sometimes the tank runs low. But I'd like to think that I got another 4 or 5 years left. But there will come a time in the future of this church when somebody will make the suggestion, let's change the name. And what will happen is there will be over 100 years of history that will just go into oblivion. You say, do you have any examples of that? I absolutely do. Brother Keith went to Tennessee Temple. Daryl and Martha went to Tennessee Temple. And they were a part of the ministry of the great Highland Park Baptist Church. Lee Robertson was the man. He was the man that always wore the navy blue double-breasted suits. I mean, when it was as though when he walked by, God walked by. That's how revered he was in our circles. But Lee Robertson stepped down. And it wasn't long before his successor began to make some changes. And then more changes were made after he stepped down. And ultimately, Tennessee Temple closed. Highland Park closed. And the little remnant of a congregation that was left, they went out on the outskirts of Chattanooga to what used to be called Camp Joy. Camp Joy was named for Dr. Robertson and his wife's little girl that died. And thousands of boys and girls in summer camps every year at Camp Joy met Christ. And that church, Highland Park, moved out, sold part of the camp, and they have one little church building there, but it's no longer called Highland Park. It's gone. When you think about Tennessee Temple Universities, all it is a memory to guys my age. But if I were to ask some preachers in the ministry that would be 25 years old, what do you know about Highland Park Baptist Church? They would say, what? Where's that? Never heard of Lee Robertson. Never heard of Tennessee Temple. Never heard of any of that. You know why? Because the name has been relegated to the dustbin of history. I love holding on to names. One of the things that I constantly do is I constantly talk about Brother Don. Why? Because I want people to know that he was God's man for 45 years at this place. I've got the Gordon Pittard family right now coming up with a picture that's about the same size as the one that we have on this wall. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to have that one framed just like Brother Don's picture. Why am I doing that? Because I want people to know that at one point for about 10 years, Gordon Pittard pastored this church. I want people to know the history. One of the things that I want us to do is this hallway here. Just like we've taken and made this hallway a mission hallway, I want this hallway to be a history hallway of this church. You say, why is that? Because the past matters. It's where you came from. And so these men, they had their name changed. They were pressured to forget those 15, 16 years of life of their training whenever they were little boys. Now they have been taken off to Babylon and they have been turned into eunuchs. Second thing, not only was there pressure in the first way, but the second way is pressure to think differently. Look with me at verse number 4. Children in whom there was no blemish, that's Daniel and the three Hebrews. They were well favored. They were skillful in all wisdom and cunning and knowledge and understanding science. And as such had ability in them to stand in the king's palace. Now, listen to this last phrase. And whom they might teach. They took the best, they took the brightest. These were young men that had been well steeped in their Judaism. They had been taught the law of Moses. They had been taught about some of the early prophets. And now they took these young men that were gifted intellectually. They were gifted physically. And why? Whom they might teach the learning and the tongue or the language of the Chaldeans. So in other words, there was a pressure to change the way that they thought. The names were changed. And now we want you to remember our ways. Well, what were the ways of the Babylonians? They had a whole different way of looking at things. As a matter of fact, there's some people that think that Daniel had such an influence on these men that the Magi that we talk about at Christmas, that Daniel was the one that was the original professor. And those men sat under his tutelage, and that's how they learned some of these ancient prophecies. But the pressure early on was for Daniel to change. What was one of the things that the Babylonians would do? They would take the livers of dead animals and they would study them. Why? Because they thought that the gods communicated that way. Daniel and his three friends, they had never been taught anything like that. They had always been taught that Jehovah was God, that Yahweh was their God. They had been taught the things of Moses. They knew the 613 laws of Moses. They knew all of those things as little boys growing up in Judah. But now, they're of college age. And they're doing their best to try to get them to change their thinking. And so, there's that pressure that young people have today. Every time we have a group of young people that graduate, my first thought is, well, they're going to go off to the university and somebody's going to start ripping on their faith. They're going to try and rip their faith from its moorings. And I've seen it 100 times over at our church. How that there would be somebody that was faithful when they were in middle school and faithful in high school. And then all of a sudden, they get to college, and the next thing you know, they have chunked everything. Why? Because some guy with letters behind his name said, oh, that's antiquated. That's old. You don't need to listen to that. And yet, Daniel is pressured to do the exact same thing, but he did not. Not only was he pressured in the name change and pressured in the way they thought, but there's a change in the worship. I want you to notice verse number 8. It says that Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore, he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. In other words, they wanted him to do things the way that they did in their religious temples. So what did Daniel say? He would say, look, not trying to cause trouble, but I just want you to let me not do this, so test me. What was the test? The test was this: don't give me the king's meat. I don't want to drink the king's wine. Why? Well, first of all, the Babylonians were Gentile. They would have had things on the menu for these young men that would not have been kosher. They may have eaten pork. They may have had some types of shellfish. They may have had something with the split hoof. All right? And so Daniel is like, no, I was raised to not do that. Well, you're going to be healthy because I'm not putting you before Nebuchadnezzar and you not be a healthy looking young man. You're going to do what I tell you. And Daniel's like, well, prove me. Let me go for 10 days. And if me and my buddies, if we are not more healthy, then we will do what you want. And so you've got the fact that it's an unclean meat. But there's a second level to that. In all of these ancient temples, Paul went through this in the epistles. You remember him when he says, if meat make my brother to offend, I will eat no meat while the world stands. Do you remember that? That was meat that was offered to idols in pagan temples. Now, it would not have bothered Paul in the least to get some type of meat that had been offered at a temple at a discount. But he would not eat it because some weaker brother would look and go, do you know that that apostle ate some meat that was offered to idols? So he said, for testimony's sake, I will not do that. I think that Daniel, for testimony's sake, would not eat the meat that had been offered to idols, and now it was being served on the king's menu. So there was a pressure about the name change. There was a pressure in the thinking, and there was a pressure to change the way that he worshiped the Lord. I think that even the way that we eat and drink can be a testimony. I want you to look with me at Revelation chapter 2, verse 14. Revelation 2, verse 14. And I want you to pick up on something here. But I have a few things against thee, because thou hast there them that hold to the doctrine of Balaam. Remember, Balaam was trying to get the people of Israel cursed, and he prostituted the gospel. Who hold to the doctrine of Balaam, who taught Balak to cast a stumbling block before the children of Israel. And what's the next phrase? To eat things sacrificed unto idols. So here in Revelation 2, you have the exact same thing that was taking place in 605 BC. So you've got all those hundreds and hundreds of years, and yet people are still doing the exact same thing. Doesn't matter how you worship. Yeah, it does. You worship biblically. You worship the way that the scriptures did it. I believe in liberty. I think that you should never violate your own conscience, but your conscience ought to be guided by what the Word of God says. If your conscience is not guided by what the Word of God says, then your conscience is seared. I believe I've got rights. I do too. I believe you've got the right to do what the Bible tells us to do. And so, what are the results of these four men resisting? Look with me at verse 17 of the same chapter. As for these four children, calls these teenage boys children, God gave them knowledge and skill and all learning and wisdom. I think it's a marvelous thing when young people have wisdom beyond their years. And you can have that by the way that you handle the Word of God. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. In other words, Daniel had something that the other three boys did not have, but yet they had knowledge and they had skill. They had wisdom, but Daniel had just a little bit more. Verse 18. Now, at the end of the days that the king had said he should bring them in, then the prince of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. So what is the timing now? Well, the first test was 10 days. And when that 10 days was over, he went in, he looked, and Daniel is there. He's strong and healthy. So the other three are there. They're strong and healthy. But now, a whole year has passed. Now they are before Nebuchadnezzar. Verse 19, and the king communed or talked with them. Among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king. In other words, when you've got all of these kids, these weren't the only four that had been taken into captivity. There were kids, children from other cultures. They had been captured as well. They're all being treated pretty much the same. They're all going to be educated. They're all going to have their names changed to have them to have their allegiance to Babylon. And they're all standing there, but these four, because they would not succumb to the pressure, they became the pressure, they stood before the king. Verse 20, and in all matters of wisdom and understanding. Now I want you to get this. In all matters that the king needed advice, when he needed some understanding, the king inquired of them. We're talking 16, 17-year-old boys. We're talking Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. This is like President Trump going to some Christian school and getting some boys in the senior class. Boys, tell me what you think I ought to do today. That's pretty much the analogy. You got these boys that just live for the Lord and they're trying to serve the Lord. Their lives have been changed for the last year. But yet the king now has seen how great these boys are. He inquires of them, and he found them 10 times better than all the magicians, now all the astrologers that were in all of his realm. In other words, these boys that weren't looking at dead livers from an animal that had been killed. No, this is the reasoning that I've got here, king. And they're 10 times better than anybody else that he's got. And it closes the chapter by saying, and Daniel continued even under the first year of King Cyrus. Cyrus is not a Babylonian. He is a Persian. You're going to have Nebuchadnezzar that's going to click along for a good while. I actually believe that Nebuchadnezzar, I believe that he's in heaven. Cyrus could be, but I think that Nebuchadnezzar is. Now, I wouldn't bet my salvation on it, but I'm thinking that he is. After he went insane, he looked up and he says, it's Daniel's God. He's the God. It's not me, it's him. And he humbled himself. But why did he do that? Because there was 4 teenage boys that said, we will not succumb to the pressure. You can change our name, but we won't forget our names. You may call me by a name, but when we're talking with each other, we're calling us by our given names. Now, there's going to come a time when your name will not be what it is right now. You're going to be given another name in heaven. There's a new name written down in heaven, and it's mine. I have no idea what it is, but I know this. I know that I'll have memories. I believe that I will know, even as I am known, I'll have memories of when I trusted Christ and how that I was saved, and the prayers that God has answered in my life. I think I'll remember those things. These men, and I call them men, they're young men, they said there's some things we will do and there's some things we will not do. And can I tell you, we ought to have that same resolve. I have people ask me, they said, well, you know, are you going to stay the same? I'm going to finish just like I started. Hopefully when 6 of these men at this church carry me out of here, I hope that somebody will be able to stand behind this pulpit and say, he didn't change his belief on the book. He stayed the same on the book. He loved the same God for 60 years or 70 years, ever how many years it is. He never waffled on his Lord. That's what I hope they can say about me. I hope I will be the peer pressure and not succumb to the peer pressure.